Go ahead and be seated. Good afternoon. All right. The last matter on our docket today is 52525 Humphreys versus State. Are you ready to proceed? Okay.
First of all, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
I please the court. My name is Josie Tessie Bayadon, and I represent Mr. Mark Humphreys. This case is about a man who was referred to by Judge Tagliati as a man with mental issues. A man that was described by Judge Bell, the trial judge himself, as a goof. A man who made 2,000 calls, approximately 2,000 calls, to the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. A man who was charged and arrested and charged for the offense of making terroristic threat, and for the offense of aggravated stalking. We raised 12 issues in our brief. However, given the time constraints, I'm going to only focus on some of the issues. However, I'd like to note that I stand by all the arguments that we made in our brief. The first issue that I would like to focus on is whether or not Judge Bell committed structural error by denying our request for a mental evaluation, and we submit that he did. He committed statutory and constitutional violation by denying our request.
This is the request that was done the day of trial.
Yes.
At the same time you made the motion to continue.
That's correct.
And then what did you proffer pursuant to Dusky to support that request at that time, other than anecdotal?
Well, one of the points that we raised was the fact that he refused to change his jail attire. And by that time, another thing, the most important thing, was that at that time I informed the judge, or attempted to inform Judge Bell, that he had stopped taking his medication. Obviously, in this case, there were reasons, ample reasons, for myself and Ms. Rapp to have a reasonable doubt as to his competency, and I'd like to go through those reasons. One, the facts of this case alone. This is a man who made 2,000 calls to Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. 2,000, not 10, not 20, 2,000, to complain about.
But counsel, we are interested in what happened on that day where you raise it and you say there's error. That's what we really have to focus
and
on,
I think,
and what you did on that occasion.
And I'm raising those is because, based on the fact that he refused to listen to our request for a mental evaluation, he disregarded all the other things that we could have raised, and that's why I'm raising them to you. Those should have been taken into consideration.
Counsel, we tell attorneys things all the time, and they don't listen to us, so we don't send them the legs grow.
And unfortunately, we had, and, you know, Judge Bell, that's how he operates. He's basically, come on, let's dance. And, you know, during the trial, he used the word, let's dance. Let's go on with the trial. And that's what he was focused on. He wasn't stopping. Nothing we said was going to stop him. And that was his focus.
Prior to the day of trial, was there any request for a competency evaluation or consideration of this man's competency that was not honored by the court?
There was no written motion. And the reason is because what had happened was that it was in front of Judge Glass. Tagliati.
And then prior to that, Judge Glass had it.
The history is basically Judge Glass in August made a determination that he was competent. In March, this is when the trial was held. But a few weeks before the trial, there were meetings with Judge Tagliati where it became obvious that his mental capacity was deteriorating. And one of the factors that I pointed out was the fact that he had stopped taking his medication. And what is significant about that is that when I pointed that out to the judge, he even interrupted and basically said, it's not a psychiatric medication, it's a headache medication. And that led Judge Tagliati to order me to get his medical records so she could review them and in camera. And she did that. And when she did that, that's when she made the comment that obviously Mr. Humphreys is a man with mental issues. And in fact, during those times where we were in front of Judge Pagliotti, also pointed out that he was no longer able to assist in his defense because he was focused on matters that did not have any bearing on the case. I didn't go into the details as to what he was focused on, but he was focused on things that really had no bearing in mitigating or explaining away the charges against him. Then we were sent to overflow, and that's how I'm sure the court knows how it operates. We go to Judge Bell, and in fact, at that time, I believe Judge Bonaventure was sitting for Judge Bell, and my client did not show up at that calendar call. And then, so Ms. Rad and I went to see him. He refused to see us. He just refused to talk about his case. And his condition progressively deteriorated. And so by the time we were there on March 12th, we were definitely going to ask for a continuance at that point and to ask for a mental evaluation, particularly when our doubt regarding his competency was confirmed by several factors. One, he was in his jail attire. He refused to change his clothes. Most defendants, competent defendants, they know that it's like Sunday. They have to shave their faces, they have to cut their hair, and they have to look their best. And they recognize that. Mr. Humphries, on the other hand, felt like, no, he didn't have to change. Additionally, he did not even want to be part of the trial. He did not want to stay there. Unlike most defendants, competent defendants, who during cross-examination would whisper in my ear and tell me, I want you to ask this question. Mr. Humphries did not want to participate at all. Those were the indications that led us to believe that he was incompetent.
On the 7th and the 12th, before Judge Bell and Bonaventure, did you raise the issue of competency at that time?
Not at that point. And the reason is because his competency, as the court knows, as such, when you prepare for trial, you spend more time on the case, you spend more time with the client. And that's when the observation progressively showed, alerted me and Ms. Rapp that, hey, listen, there's no way we can proceed to trial. We need to ask for this request for a mental evaluation. And instead, what Judge Bell did, of course, was rely on the competency determination made by Judge Glass. And under Ferguson, he shouldn't have done that. And there's a reason for that. The reason why U.S. Supreme Court says the trial court is vested with that determination. And the reason is because by the time we were in front of Judge Bell, the determination of competency was approximately 8 months old. Judge Glass's last contact with Mr. Humphries was in August of 2007. Trial is in March 2008. So the limited contact that she had really shouldn't have affected Judge Bell's decision whether or not he was competent to proceed with the trial. And not only was the determination old, there were changes in circumstances. Obviously, when he was evaluated by Judge Glass, he was taking his medication because he had just come from Lakes Crossing. By the time we were in front of Judge Bell, a few weeks before that, had stopped taking his medication. I think that had a significant impact on his mental capacity. And at that time, I also discovered a few weeks before the trial that he had been moved from the general population to 2C. 2C is a unit for individuals with mental issues. I became aware of these information a few weeks before the calendar call. And the more I met with him, the more I tried to talk with him, that's when we realized he was not competent and that another mental evaluation was necessary. And our request really was confirmed by the fact that after he was convicted by the jury, before at sentencing, Judge Bell, trial is done. When I said judge, obviously he had relapsed, he needs to be evaluated again. He didn't question it. He didn't object to it. He just basically said, oh, yeah, he's a goof. And he went to Department 5. Department 5 found that he was incompetent. So that confirmed his incompetency. And again, he went to Lakes Crossing. He was ultimately sentenced. several months later after he was returned from Lakes Crossing. Based on the fact that he relied on the representation, on the determination of Judge Glass as to the competency, that, based on Ferguson, I believe, Judge Bell committed a reversible error, and the conviction should be reversed. The other issue that I would like to address at this point is whether or not Judge the lower court violated his right against double jeopardy by having by the fact that he was convicted of both the first count of making terrorist threats and the aggravated stalking. In Lisby, this court laid out the general test for determining whether or not a charge is violates double jeopardy, which essentially is the Blackburger test. And later on in McIntosh, this court said that that test that we laid out should not be applied strictly. Instead, you have to look at the facts of the case. And in this case, the facts of the case clearly show that his right against double jeopardy was violated. And in fact, the state recognized the double jeopardy problem. And that's the reason why, prior to trial, they filed a motion, they filed an amended complaint, information. Essentially, what they did was that count one was amended to delete the names of the victims who were also identified in count two. And this time, they left the Hard Rock Hotel as the victim. And in count two, now it's still Mr. Howard, Mr. Trombley, and Ms. Mendenhall. But the amendment didn't rectify the situation, didn't correct the problem, because they're still punishing him for the same act, for the same conduct.
How do you respond to the state's position that one part was based upon his threat to bomb the hotel, opposed to the other threat that was made that as to certain employees, that he knew where they lived, what they looked like, where they parked, and that he was going to kill them?
Well, the problem with that is that the alleged threat to the hotel is also tied to the threats to Mr. Trombley, Mr. Howard, and Ms. Mendenhall. This is not a situation where, in one situation, he engaged in a course of conduct where he targeted a particular person. No, if you read the facts and I'm sure you have, as the witnesses testified, he would simply call and say, hey, my name is Mark Humphries, and I would like to talk to so-and-so. And if that person says, oh, he's not here, Mr. Humphries would then go into a profanity-laced comment where he would get mad. I think I reached my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Peg Samples, and I represent the respondent, the State of Nevada, in this case. Your Honors, the State of Nevada respectfully requests this Court affirm the judgment of conviction, which was entered below after a jury found the defendant guilty of making bomb threats and aggravated stalking. No court has ever held that a defendant who is able but totally unwilling to assist with his defense is incompetent. That is not the standard laid out in Dusky or any of the statutes or cases in this jurisdiction. What Dusky talks about is a defendant's ability to understand the nature of the charges against him and to assist his counsel with a reasonable degree of understanding. In this case, we have a defendant who knew what a preliminary hearing was, he knew what a pretrial writ of habeas corpus was, he knew what his 60-day trial rights were, and he expressed to the court several times that he wanted to go to trial and be found innocent. He is able to assist with his counsel, but several times he makes it quite clear that he is unwilling to. That does not mean that the court is required to suspend proceedings and have him evaluated for competency. It's the state's position that at the calendar call on March 12th, the defense did not raise a reasonable doubt regarding the defendant's competence. If you look at the transcript of the hearing that occurred on March 12th, that's the first day of trial, there are several protracted hearings and arguments regarding several issues, the first of which the defense objects to the information as it's pled. We go through arguments. The court hears both sides. The second argument is they make an objection as to the notice statutes, and they want to argue that our notice of witnesses was incomplete. At no time during that hearing, up until that point, do they raise the competency issue. It's at that point that the defendant, Mr. Humphreys, says, I don't want to dress in civilian clothes. And at that point, Ms. Biden says, hold the boat, I want to request an evaluation for competency. We'd had several hearings up until that point where competency was never raised, including one hearing before Judge Togliatti where Ms. Biden told the court, I feel that the defendant is competent. He understands what a jury trial is. He understands his role, he understands the court's role, and he understands the jury's role. We had several hearings before and after that time where competency issues were never raised. In fact, the only time between the initial competency evaluation before his preliminary hearing and up until trial that the competency issue was raised was when Ms. Biden informed the court that the defendant had stopped taking his medication. At that point, Judge Togliatti ordered all of the defendant's medical records from CCDC, and she held a hearing which lasted over an hour outside the presence of the state. We can presume the state doesn't know the exact issues that were raised at that hearing since we weren't present, but we know that after that point, Judge Togliatti did not send the defendant to be evaluated. So we can presume that no reasonable doubt was raised as to his competency at that point. Again, the only time that it was raised was on the actual trial date after the defendant refused to dress in civilian clothes. This court has stated several times that the court only has to suspend proceedings and order a competency hearing when the defense raises a reasonable doubt in the trial court's mind. Again, that didn't happen here. Moving on to the double jeopardy issue.
Can I just send you back to that one point? I'm curious as to what defense had raised that was relevant to Dusky at that point that they were requesting the continuance.
At the point of the at the first day of trial?
Yes.
They raised nothing as that would give the trial court a reasonable doubt under the Dusky standard. They did not say that the defendant was unable to speak with them. In fact, in court, he was speaking with them. He just would not agree with their tactical decision, and that was the issue all along. He was present in court. He was able to assist with them, but he wouldn't. And Ms. Biden expressed this all along. First of all, she wanted to file a pretrial writ of habeas corpus. She informed the defendant that to do so, it would probably require him to raise his right to trial within 60 days. At that point, he said no. You do not have my permission to raise a pretrial writ of habeas corpus because I do not want to waive my 60 days. So she didn't file that writ, and she expressed her frustration with that decision all along. She also expressed her frustration with the fact that the defendant would not give her permission to speak with his family members or consent to request his medical records. That's tactical decisions that the defendant makes which differ from those opinions of his counsel, does not mean that he's incompetent. It simply means that he's the client, he's able to control his own case. And like I said, no court has ever held that a defendant who's able but unwilling to cooperate with his defense is incompetent. That's not the standard under Dusky.
Thank you.
Under double jeopardy, you can look at the statutes. Both of them require several elements that the other does not. For example, an aggravated stalking requires a person to actually feel scared, and terrorist threats does not have that requirement. The terrorist threat statute also requires an act of terrorism or threat of using weapons of mass destruction or things of that nature. That's certainly not required in the aggravated stalking statute. Here we have the terrorist threat involves Mr. Humphreys calling the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. He calls several times and says that he's going to blow it up, that he's going to set it on fire, that he's going to plant a bomb and things like that. And then we have the aggravated stalking where he's calling specific people. He's telling Mr. Trombley, I know where you live. I know what car you drive. I'm going to follow you home at night. He says that to Ms. Mendenhall and Mr. Howard as well. We have different victims. We have different time frames. We have different phone calls, things of that nature. So double jeopardy principles or redundancy principles are not implicated in that. Again, Your Honors, I would just reiterate the fact that the defendant was able to assist with his counsel all along. He just did not agree with certain tactical decisions that he was that she was making. Again, that does not make her incompetent, make him incompetent under the Dusky standard. And if the court has no further questions, I'd be happy to take.
Counsel, do you have any response? Defense asserted that to demonstrate his lack of competency, that the court prior to sentencing did determine that he was not competent to him. Is there a linkage there that we should consider, or why shouldn't we?
Well, first of all, after sentencing, it was a Ms. Bayouden raised a different argument. She told Judge Bell, my client has had a total mental relapse. That's different from what she said prior to trial and at trial. At that point, Judge Bell agreed to send him to be evaluated. He actually met with two different doctors while in custody, but he refused to cooperate with them. And at that point, Judge Glass used her discretionary power to send him to Lake, where he came back competent. So he was never found incompetent in this case. And I apologize, I couldn't hear the second part of your question.
Just in terms of what was alleged by defense in terms of this period after the trial, prior to sentencing, where they're making the linkage that because he was not competent at that point, we should really have got it.
Right. The distinction is that before, on the day of trial, they didn't meet the Dusky standard. However, after trial, what Ms. Bayouden said is he's had a total mental relapse and cannot communicate with me. And that's why the court, that's a reasonable doubt under the Dusky standard, and that's why he was evaluated after the jury verdict.
Any other questions? Anything else you want to add?
No,
all right, thank you.
First of all, competency is fluid. It's ongoing. And that's why even in the middle of trial, even before sentencing, you can raise it. And in Gates versus Woodford, it's not that case. It's the Drope versus Missouri. That is a case where the defendant had started the trial. On the second day of trial, he shot himself. And the lower court concluded that the decision was his own doing. He shot himself, and that's why, and he was voluntary, he was knowing. But they reversed the conviction because the mere fact that he decided he shot himself and could not attend the trial was a factor that should have been considered, because certainly his presence would have enabled the judge, trial judge, to observe the defendant whether or not his behavior is something that would alert incompetency. So it's something that you can raise at any time. And in this case, Ms. Samples indicated that told you that there was a determination that he was able to understand. He knew what a trial is. He knew what an attorney is. Mr. Humphreys, has been to Lakes Crossing. He is able to regurgitate what he is told, which is what is an attorney, what is a prosecutor, what is a jury. Does the question stop there? Of course not. It has to be whether or not he's able to assist in his defense. And in Rohan Gates versus Woodford, that is a case where the defendant refused to talk to his attorneys who were appointed to help him in his post-conviction papers. And based on that, they concluded that he was incompetent. His refusal led him to be unable to assist in his defense. And that's what we told Judge Bell. We said he refused to meet with us.
Thank you. Counsel, thank you for your arguments and your briefs. This matter will stand submitted, and the court will stand in recess until...